Welcome. I'm Faye Waterman, the conversation curator, and this is What's Your Superpower podcast. And my guest today is Heather Rickard. Heather has two daughters and two amazing twin grandsons who are nearly six. She has been married for 46 years. I say that's a superpower in itself, and loves helping others achieve their goals. She runs a business called Simply Successful in Health. She helps other people achieve optimum health simply and successfully. She uses the Isagenix program as the vehicle. However, she takes the time to tailor a plan to work with her clients, always making sure that she finds out what their health goals are. Her specialty is helping people with sleep, crappy moods, lacking in energy, or weight management issues. She believes those four things are like connecting circles. For example, if you're not sleeping well, you may wake up in a crappy mood and lack in energy. Then you hit the cupboard for a quick fix, which often not something that is going to help you sustain a healthy weight. So she helps break the pattern at any point. She is also very passionate about ch changing the image of network marketing. She says, if someone loves the products and wants to use them forever and doesn't want anything to do with the business, that's fine. However, her biggest nightmare is that someone loves the product, finds that that makes a difference for them, but stops using them because of finances. She shows people a simple way to at least earn enough to pay for their products, if not pay bills, or even build a business that gives them more time, freedom than currently they have. She loves life and enjoys hanging out with positive, like-minded people. She says one of her superpowers is coaching people to achieve big, audacious goals like climbing Mount Kilimanjaro, as she did in 2013. What a superpower! And welcome, Heather, to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Faye. It's really lovely to be here. And and thank you. I was listening to that thinking, wow, who is this? It's me. And you get me raw and real. You know, I'm someone who I'm just proud of who I am. I'll be turning 65 this year. I'm very as you see me from my kitchen, just been making some protein balls. And you've got me in just day to day, which I think is really cool for people to be okay with themselves and be on something like this as a day to day person.
And it's all about authenticity. That's what this podcast is about, authenticity. But it's also about recognizing how good you are at what you do and how good you are at helping other people achieve their goals and do things in life that they may have a fear of something stopping them from doing that. So you help them do that too. So, Heather, let's share a little bit about your backstory, where you come from, how you got to where you are today, but why you're so passionate about what you do, and some achievements that you've had along the way.
My backstory is I come from England. At the tender age of 18, I decided to move right across the other side of the world because I'd met my husband Neil, who was from New Zealand, and I moved to New Zealand, and then a few years later we moved to Australia. So I call myself a Pomoski, Pommy Aussie Kiwi, a real mixture of all three. If we go back a minute to mum and dad, I was brought up very in a beautiful, warm family home with my mum, my dad, and me. I had a double bonus because I had me, my mum, and dad. So I had that, you know, one child syndrome, just me. However, I had two half sisters and a half brother who used to just drop in, take me away. I'd have weekends with them. So I definitely never look at them as half brothers or sisters, particularly one who I'm very close to. I have a very close relationship with them, but I did have that, you know, lovely, very special relationship with mum and dad. So leaving at the age of 18 to make that decision to, you know, follow my the man of my dreams was big. I remember, you know, having to deliberate over that, you know, what do I do? Because I was already in New Zealand by that time. Do I stay? Do I go? So, yeah, I made big decisions at a very young age. And in that time with mum and dad, I learned so much. My mum was a beautiful English woman, you know, she was very proper. But she also had quite a colourful background. And so we used to talk very deeply about things. There was nothing ever hidden. So, yeah, it was great. My dad was a businessman and taught me a lot about business over the years. And I used to be his helper at work, weekends, things like that, earn a little bit of pocket money. And they met my husband and welcomed him into our home for a few months before he came back to New Zealand. So, yeah, there was so much love in my life until I moved away. And then I moved to New Zealand, and that's when the two girls came along, beautiful Angela and Samantha, who I adore with, you know, every ounce of my being. And I'm, you know, now they're both married. So I think as any mum would feel, you know, you're like, oh, phew. They're both someone who's going to look after them, particularly the elder one who has only just got married. And then the younger one has twin boys. So we never had boys. And to us, it's just an absolute joy to be able to be part of their upbringing and spend time with them, hang out with them. I sort of sometimes ache to see them the same way you ache when you're away from your own children. I love my time with them, and I love watching them with my husband, who they adore. We actually saw an Instagram thing the other day of little grandchildren running straight past grandma to grandpa. And there was a whole lot of them in a row. And it was so funny. It's exactly what the boys do. They go, hey, Granny Belle, where's granddad?
Isn't it interesting? How far away do they live from you?
Only 35 minutes. So we do school drop off twice a week, pick up and those kind of things. So, yeah, we lived with them right through till 18 months ago. So we actually were very much a big part of their first sort of 4 years. And now we're very close. So, yeah, it's wonderful.
Beautiful.
Very blessed. Yeah.
There's nothing nicer than grandchildren, and they teach you lots. You can enjoy them, but the best thing is that you can give them back. You don't have them full time. So therefore, there's a different appreciation. There's a different kind of love for them. I think it's hard to explain, But what a beautiful upbringing, what a beautiful way to grow up and have parents who really valued you as a daughter and taught you things that a lot of kids don't get taught anytime. So you're very, very honored to have beautiful parents like that. You moved from England to New Zealand. You stayed there for a couple of years and then you moved to Australia.
Yeah.
What brought you to Australia?
That's a great question. I actually fell into the direct selling industry. For any mums who know, sort of in the party plan side, so doing presentations in the home. And I started that in New Zealand and was very successful at it. I actually did it to save enough money to take my first daughter back home to England with my husband. We did that for 6 months. So that was my first. You asked about accomplishments, and I was thinking, I'm always challenged by that question, but they come up, don't they, naturally?
Yeah.
So that was my first big goal. I saved that money and just watched it build up in the bank account until we had enough to book tickets and go home. So it was amazing. And the biggest thing about my time in direct sales in the early stages was actually realizing that I was someone who was a real person in my own right. And, you know, years back, I was always Mike's daughter. Then I got married and I was Neil's wife at the rugby because he was a very successful rugby player. And then suddenly when I started building my own direct selling business, I was like, I'm Heather Rickard. I am a person, you know, who has an identity and the other thing, of course, as soon as you're a mother, you're Angela's mum. And so I really enjoyed that part of it. I enjoyed building something and being my own business. And that business brought us to Australia. So the owner of that business decided that he wanted to offer us the chance to come to Australia and for me to help build his business over here in Australia. So that's how we ended up in Melbourne, bringing two by that time. I had my second daughter while I was in that business and two young children to Melbourne and start a new life. So yeah, that, and I was with that company for 8 years all up, 4 years in New Zealand and 4 years in Australia until I spread my wings and did more. Yeah.
And it served a purpose for you to be able to accomplish taking your first daughter to England to see your parents and do that sort of thing. And it is, you can create a real passive income out of MLM and or direct selling. And it's much easier these days because you don't have to go into people's homes. You can talk to them online and do all that sort of thing, and it's much easier. When you first started your doing direct selling, what was the feeling for you? How did you feel? What was it like for you to start that? Because I know there's a lot of hesitation around MLMs and, oh, I don't want to do that and all that sort of thing. But you were young at the time. What was that feeling for you?
That's another great question. I was excited. I found my competitive nature, which I don't think had come out when I was younger, because that more comes out in sport, and I definitely wasn't a sporty kid. But I found that when I started kicking goals and you know, getting success, it really got me excited inside. I was incredibly nervous. So this story hasn't come out for a long time, but I used to hate reading anything out loud. If you gave me a piece of paper and asked me to read a paragraph, I literally at school would get butterflies in my tummy because I'd maybe read something back to front or the wrong way around, and I'd say the wrong word. And so to stand up in front of a group of people and talk about this beautiful costume jewelry, and it was, as you're right, in those days it was in their home, I was terrified. I went red, literally my face used to go red here, and I'd even be red in my parting. And so overcoming that and realizing that I could actually get out, and I ended up doing, you know, three or four of those a week, and loving it and going into people's homes, setting up, doing the talk, taking orders, booking parties. It just became something that I loved doing. And I think overcoming that fear of public speaking, of selling, of talking to people, building relationships, that was huge. So yes, in answer to your question, there's a lot of nervousness. I didn't really know about all that stuff about the stigma of the industry, to be honest. I didn't even know there was one. So it didn't worry me. And I think my mother-in-law was probably the only one who said, you know, what are you doing all that for? You know, why don't you just look after the kids? That kind of attitude. But yeah, I really, that was probably after I was in it, I started to hear a little bit of that conversation around the direct selling industry. But I am so deeply passionate about it now because I see so many women doing what I did, stepping out of themselves, creating a business for themselves where they can still be home with their babies and their children and take them to school and do canteen and all those things, but build a business of their own and help with another income stream into the family. So there is nothing to me, there's nothing. What is wrong with taking a product, taking it to market and selling it? That's it. Yeah.
Well, it's actually happening more and more these days that people are taking products to market and selling them online. And it's not just necessarily MLMs, it's lots of different products. So, you know, getting through that first 8 years of learning about yourself, which you would have, there's a superpower in that, the courage you plucked up to go into people's homes. You met different people, you would have met lovely people, you would have made connections, made friends, all those sorts of things when you were doing that. And then moving to Australia and working another 4 years within that industry, what did you do when you stopped doing that side of things?
Yeah, I I actually had a friend who was in life insurance. I seem to have walked from industries that have a bit of a stigma about them. So I had a friend who sold life insurance, and he said to me, "You know, you'd be great at this." And he introduced me to someone else, and I actually set up a business called Woman's Life, which was it was back in the day where women weren't getting superannuation, they weren't saving any money. And if they did end up separated, they had, you know, a real challenge on their hands. So yeah, it was called Women's Life. It was with National Mutual, and I did that for a number of years. And yeah, it was great. It was something very different. And back then, the life insurance industry or financial planning or whatever you call it, industry was really cutthroat. And I remember when I first got into this office, I'd never been in an office environment, sitting there starting to write my prospect list. And this guy poked his head around the door and said, "You know, this is really hard, don't you?" Right. Okay. Thank you.
Just what you needed.
I'd been nurtured in this lovely, warm environment over 8 years of direct selling. And I was in this, you know, it's hard. And I'm very much male dominated industry. So it was a big change, but I learned a lot over that time. I learned the whole how to navigate corporate. And my market became the direct selling industry because I knew there was a lot of women who were out there earning one, two, three, $400 a week, but just putting it into the grocery bill and not saving any for themselves. So I started helping people, you know, create saving plans, superannuation, women in particular. And that was my market. And that drew me back into direct selling. So one of my clients said to me, "Hey, you know, we've got a job for you. Do you want to come and work with us?" So then after those few years in the industry, in the life insurance industry, I stepped back into direct sales, but at a corporate level. Yeah. So very different again.
Isn't it? It's interesting because the lessons you learned in that industry were just building on top of what you learned previously, but also giving you an insight into people in a different perspective. And that in itself is amazing. But what you actually did too was help women, support women who were, you know, working and earning only $300 or $400 a week, putting it in the groceries, not doing anything for themselves, but teaching them to be able to manage their finances so that they could have a little spare cash, put some away, have a little bit of spare cash, and then do what they needed to do for the family. And that's a skill in itself. So that's another superpower that you have. But the skills that you taught these women were just incredible because women these days, and as you said, you know, they didn't have any money left over for them. And it's like these days, women who get left behind after a divorce or something like that, they're usually left with nothing. So you were teaching women to be financially independent, financially, you know, financial wellness is what I refer to it as. So that is an amazing skill again. So you were poached again after that to go into the MLM again. So what was it that you were poached into?
I was poached into a company called Billycart Children's Clothes.
Oh, I know, Billy Cash.
We actually even have a little Facebook group going of people who adore Billycart clothes and have been wanting more. So yeah, and I still know the two owners of Billycart. And I had so much fun over those years. You know, I built their business. I worked with them really closely. Amazing women, two women, two poles apart. One was the designer, Neve McCall. She designed all those amazing, you know, clothes for the kids, which our kids wore as well. And the other was Denny Francisco, who was very driven. She was the one who headed up the sales side and worked more closely with me. But it was great. We had so much fun. And yeah, I learned a whole nother. I actually learned my NLP for anybody who doesn't know neuro-linguistic programming. I actually was blessed that someone came into Billycart to work with our internal staff and field people and teach them some NLP. So I did my full practitioners and masters in NLP. So I think my biggest learning in that was realizing that you can do, you know, all the courses under the sun to learn about personalities and how to relate to different people. But what NLP taught me was behavioral flexibility. I can't expect someone else to change. So if I want to build a relationship with someone, I've got to look at where they're at in their life, in their personality, and the way they think and how they do things. And I need to adapt to that. And I often refer back to my NLP, and I probably use it on a daily basis without even knowing it, because it's a subliminal thing that just sits there, you know, to create those connections with people and work with people. So that was my probably biggest gift that I got from Billycart. And some lifelong friends who are still some of my besties through running that. And corporate was different. I wasn't building my own business. I was building their business. I was an employee. I had to learn all that kind of thing. But funny you use the word poached, because I was actually poached from them to come to Sydney to work for another direct selling company. So, I never knew
around the tracks.
Yeah, I never knew the poached word. In fact, the person who rang me, they told me the kind of person they were looking for. And I went, well, if I knew
That's
that
me.
Person. Well, no, I said, if I knew that person, I'd want them in Billycart with me. So no, sorry, I can't help you. And I hung up, but I actually took the phone number down of this lady. And a few weeks later, I thought, I wonder what that was all about. And I rang her and she said, I got to speak to the owner of the recruitment company. And she said, oh, no. She said, we weren't asking you to find someone. We want you. I was like, oh, what's all this about?
So they were headhunting.
Yeah, it was very funny. I often say I had no idea what poaching was about or headhunting was about until then. Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it? Because people get to know you because you mix in different circles all the time. And, you know, when someone meets you and they start talking about what you're doing, then other people become curious about who you are. And they probably would check up on you to see how and what how you worked. If they liked your work ethic, that's when they come along and headhunt you.
I think now it's interesting talking to her. She's such an expert at what she does. And talking to you sort of draws out, you know, why I'm passionate about what I do now, helping people to achieve their goals, because of all these little pieces along the way that, you know, I pushed through something and achieved it, or got to set a goal and achieve a goal. So, yeah, it's interesting having you take me through my journey, realizing where the superpowers, as you call them, came from.
And it is a journey. You go through a journey, you learn lessons, and you move on to the next thing. And sometimes when you do something, it may not work out, but in your situation, it's all worked out, and someone's come along and asked you to do something for them, so you've gone and worked for them. And it's just like a revolving door. But the opportunities and the lessons that you've learned have brought you to where you are today and created the person you are today, where you have this ability to connect with people on a level of, when we weren't going to the NLP, but connect with people on a level where they're at so that they connect with you.
Absolutely. And you know, that's what it's all about. It's about not selling a product or a business for someone, but literally finding out what they need, where they're at. You know, if you could look at where you're at today and where you'd like to be 12 months from now, and then, you know, map out a path for you to get from A to B. And as long as the pain of not being at B is strong enough, then you will take those steps guided and working with someone to get there. But often what happens is I'm here right now and I know I want to be there, but the pain of not being there is not big enough right now. See this in people's health. We see it in people's businesses. We see it in people's financial situations. And there just suddenly comes a point that's like, oh, I really need to do something right now. And when they do, then that's where I see my skill is to help guide them. But it's got to be that they've leaned in. So
Yeah.
if in your business or your life you're dragging people, it's too hard. It's too much hard work. It's not worth it.
You can't drag people. You can't make people do what they don't want to do. They have to want to do it. And I think sometimes that's a realization through many conversations for building that trust, building that relationship with somebody, and taking them on a journey so that they can actually see their magic and their brilliance and the opportunities that they can create for themselves. And it's not about you dragging them along. It's about you being able to nurture them so when it's the right time, they come to you and say, I'm ready, Heather, and I want to do this. Please help me. Please have my back while I'm on this journey. And then you get the privilege of watching them grow, watching their health improve, watching them grow their network, but grow as a person to something you've seen at first, and to help nurture to something that they've always wanted to be, but had a fear about that journey.
And sometimes people don't see that in themselves until you uncover it. So often people need to see that you believe in them and you know where they could be for them to believe in themselves. It's like the Michelangelo statue of David story. He saw what was in that piece of marble, but he needed to see it to create it. And often people need you to see what's in them and tell them that so that then they can see it and then you can help them move from A to B.
Yeah, because a lot of the time as humans, we don't see the magic and the brilliance in us because we're too, I was going to say self-absorbed, but it's not really that. We're too busy doing what we have to exist in life. And we don't actually get the time to sit down, relax, and absorb and see who we actually are and where we want to go. So you create that. You create that opportunity for people to be able to do that and take them on that journey, and a great journey too.
Yes, absolutely. And the kookaburra was just singing in the background. I'm thinking, oh, we must be saying the right thing because the kookaburra is singing. And that brings me to once I was in Sydney, part of my journey there was that I decided that I wanted to do, as we mentioned at the beginning, the Kilimanjaro story. So I'd always sort of seen I'd seen posters about Kilimanjaro. I'd seen things about Tanzania, and I'd always sort of had a little bit of an inkling in my mind that I'd like to do that. But this time, this flyer came across my desk to raise money for Special Olympics, which was something that was very close to my heart, which is a charity that helps kids with intellectual difficulties do sport. And it was to raise money for them. It was to climb this massive mountain, the highest mountain in Africa. And so, yeah, that came up at the perfect time for me, because I was not feeling like I was capable of that at all. But I signed on the dotted line and decided, you know what? I talked to so many people and helped people with their A to B, and now I need to do a massive A to B for myself. Follow all the principles that I have, visualization, taking small steps, looking for the people that you can model, that you can learn from, all of that, and get from A to B. Yeah, that was what led me to what I do now, was just I needed to get fit and healthy. I was scared after I'd signed on the dotted line to climb Kilimanjaro. I was scared that I wouldn't make it. or I would die going up there, and I didn't want to do that. Funny, dying going up there, that's pretty, that's a bit of extreme. But not making it to the top, having been someone who wasn't competitive, now to someone who is competitive, was big. I'm not going to set my sights on this and raise money and then not make it to the top. So that was probably my biggest driving force, was making sure that I was fit and well enough and strong enough to get to the top. Yeah, so.
And how long was your training before you actually left to go there and climb the mountain? How long did you train for? Because I mean, you have to be, the air gets thinner as you go up, and you have to train for that sort of thing, going there. And athletes, when they are going to a country where they're are going to compete or whatever, and the air is thinner up there, they've got to go there and train in that. But you have to be really careful doing those sorts of things.
Yeah, you do have to be careful. And that's why I did two things. I announced your question around 6 months. So I think I seriously started training around maybe a little bit more, 8 months. I seriously started training around June, July. And then March, I climbed Kilimanjaro. So summited early March. As I said, it was around 11 years ago. So it was that period of time, but I elicited two people. One was my beautiful naturopath friend, Jennifer Jeffries, to help me with my nutrition, dropping quite a bit of weight. I dropped around 13 kilos over that time, over 20 pounds for anybody who's listening from countries that use pounds. And then I also got a trainer who trains people to do altitude training. His father was actually the first person to summit Everest without oxygen. So
Wow.
yeah, he's called Joe Bonington. So Chris Bonington was his dad. So he'd be great to come on here, by the way. Anyway, that's another story. But those two people, very influential in my health journey, Jen and Joe, just huge to be able to achieve that. And it was an amazing thing to do, and to come back. And I visualized all the way. I visualized myself coming back, landing at the airport, and seeing my husband and giving him a big hug and going, "Hey, I did it," because I was coming home. That was it. I was going to make sure I came home and I was able to celebrate having, summited. So yeah, that you do need to have definitely. We could do a whole nother podcast on the lessons that I learned on the way. And also the achievement of it and what you need to do when you set yourself a big audacious goal. So yeah, that's
We'll
probably
do that again.
two.
Yes. But I want to ask you, what was the feeling once you got to the top of Kilimanjaro? What was that actual feeling?
It's going to surprise you, this, because it was really good. I was very excited and good to have ticked off that box and got to the top. You don't stay there for long. So one of my biggest, I don't believe in regrets, but if I could do it again, which I may well do, it's that I didn't spend enough time just breathing it in and looking around and going, "Wow, I'm at the highest point in Africa, and I'm at the top of the world looking down." I didn't really do that. It all happened very quickly because you have to get down again because you can't stay at that really high altitude for too long. The other thing is, Faye, I was terrified of coming down. So as a
Really?
kid, I used to have nightmares of losing control going down a slope or something like that. And so the whole thing of getting down was bigger in my head than getting to the top. So there was a new goal that I had to achieve, and it wasn't easy because by that time you've all spread out quite thin, and we had two of us to one guide, and my beautiful tentie, we call them because we shared a tent, was way more scared, way more sick. She was almost green, and she had to go with the guide, but he can only take one person. So he had to show me what to do. And show me how to sort of ski down through this tree at a certain point. And he had to go ahead of me, teach me what to do, go ahead of me with her. And then I'd catch him up and he'd give me a little bit of a pep talk and then we'd keep going. So the biggest feeling was not at the top. It was when I got to the bottom and cried. And it was just like, that because I was so scared of that part. Yeah, it was amazing. So that's the story of getting to the top and then getting down.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because you had the challenge of going up to the top, and then the challenge, which was more of a challenge for you to come down, and the lessons that you learned from that were what?
That I could do it on my own. It was because my tentie was crying because she said, "I feel so selfish because I took him off you and you had to do it on your own." I said, No, you've taught me the biggest lesson because you've taught me that I can do it on my own as long as I get the instruction and I've got the support of someone who's there." That was the biggest lesson, yeah, that I can, because it can be someone who, if someone will do something for me, I'll let them. I'm not, I can fall into that trap, but it really taught me, and I have ever since then been much stronger on, I can do this, I can work this out, I can do it on my own. And every now and then that pattern drops back a little bit, but I pull myself back into it and go, no, you can work this out, you can do this. So yeah, that's the biggest lesson. Thank you for asking that question because it was really big. Yeah.
But you also now have an awareness of the things that you can actually do, the big audacious goals, the things that seem too hard. You're going to have a go at them and you're going to achieve them because you know you can. Whereas once upon a time, you may have doubted it and allowed someone else to help you do it. But now you know you can do it. And you can talk about that, which is a superpower, talk about that to others of your achievements, of your fear of not so much going up, but coming down. There was a fear there. But you achieved it. You achieved it. And they're things that they're the stories that you can share with people to give them the strength to squash that fear that they have and do the thing that they really want to have a go at. Because life is short and we've got to do the do.
And we have to push through those things that scare you so much. And when you do, you feel so good. And there's a few others that I've done along the way. And it's just like, yes, it's like a real power of yes. And now I get as much buzz out of seeing someone else. One of my team got up and did the most brilliant opening of a room on stage. A couple of weeks ago, and I was so proud of her. Like my heart was just about jumping out of my skin, because it was just, that's something to instill in her the strength that, yeah, you can do that. You can absolutely do that.
Yeah.
So my advice would be if something is a, oh, I could never do that, as soon as that goes off in my brain, it's like, uh-oh, you have to do it, like unless it's particularly, really life-threatening. But
Yeah.
the majority of the time, if it's something that, like I nearly messaged you earlier on and said, oh, you know what? I think we need to do this next week, for time and preparation and all that. And I'm so glad we did do it now because why? Why put it off till next week when you can do it right now, today?
Exactly. And it's all about the authenticity. It's all about being real. I always say the raw, the real, and the heartfelt of the conversation. That's what it's all about. And it's sharing your strengths. It's sharing weaknesses. And we all have strengths and we all have weaknesses. And when we're in business, we do our bit and then we find others who are strong in the bit that we're not strong in to support us. That's building our team. And it's important that we embrace people along the way and give them something that they haven't got or they have got, but they don't see it, that potential, that ability to achieve something. And with what you do, after you came back from Kilimanjaro, what did you do after you got back home, given your husband a big hug and said, I'm home? What was it that you wanted to do? What did you want to achieve after that?
One of the things was we wanted to live by the beach. So we actually made a decision very soon after that to rent out our house. and go and rent down at the beach and live on a balcony looking out over the water. We did that. It was big.
Perfect,
Yes.
perfect.
Yeah, that was a big one. We did that. Not right then, but a little bit later, I stepped away from the business that I was involved in at the time, which was recruitment. We hadn't actually, bottom line is that woman who rang me that day and said, this is what we're doing, I ended up doing that with her later on. It's quite crazy, but that's she took me into that company, which was DK Family Learning. And then I ended up working for her a few years later, or with her, partnering with her, and I was in recruitment. But it wasn't my happy place. It definitely wasn't the best environment for me, culture-wise. In fact, I just did a post about this today. Culture-wise, it wasn't right. There was a lot of things that weren't quite right. And so when I stepped away from that, and that's when I stepped into my own business doing what I'm doing now, because I wanted to be in a business where I had my own choices. I could do what I wanted. I, wasn't under the stress of having to conform to someone else's values. And I choose who I work with. So yeah, it definitely helped me make that decision. So they were the two things, probably moving down to the water, and making the decision to step out of that business. But that was a little bit further on in my the time. Yeah. Yeah.
And you are where you are today. Tell us some stories about some of the people that you've worked with, where you've seen them in this place where they're just being and not really doing what they love, and you've shared your journey with them and they've been inspired.
Wow. Who would be the first person? I think.
You don't need to mention names, but just, yeah.
Yeah, there's two that come to mind. One is someone in the UK who I just adore, and she has really she has a business that she runs, and she still runs that in the health industry. But she stepped out and built another income on the side for herself and her family. And more importantly, she stepped into a community that she's absolutely embraced and that supports her as an individual. And I think if she was asked this question, she would say the fact that I have people who cheer me on and are there for me, have my back. And and it gives me another way to earn an additional income. In the UK, it's pretty tough at the moment, and so every little bit, makes a big difference. So that would be one. And the other one that comes to mind is another leader who, over in here in Australia, the one I mentioned before. The other one would be a Australian leader who, again, she's able to run a business from home. She's able to bring her children through giving them extra tuition. She's got money to do that. And she's really stepped up in herself. So the two examples I've given you are not health examples, they're more business examples. The health examples are so many. And it might be 5 kilos when I just see some, becoming a runner. I'm a runner now, so I haven't climbed any more mountains, but I became a runner. So I've got people who couldn't run to the stage of running. I had someone who used to drink 40 cups of coffee a day,
You're kidding me.
who's gone to one.
40
Four,
cups.
F-O, yeah, not
They
F-O.
would never have had their hand free of a cup.
I know. To now. Having dropped kilos, looking amazing, saying, why didn't I know about this before? Gut health is so much better. So it's those kind of shifts. Yes, you have the before and afters, mum who's a little bit, on the whatever you want to say. I don't even like talking about weight, but not feeling happy in herself, to mum who's just, going, yeah, I can look in the mirror and feel really proud. So yeah.
The pose, you can stand there and say, I'm fantastic. Yeah,
Exactly.
love it.
Yeah.
Tell me how you started running. What inspired you to start running?
Someone asked me to go on a park run with her in the UK. And I went, oh, okay. I did a little bit of running around the streets, always have, even when my kids were little. And so she inspired me to do a park run. And I went to support her. We did it and we achieved it. And I was incredibly nervous before I did that, like we're talking about when you get nervous and push through. And then it began. I started hearing people talk about marathons, half marathons. Oh yeah, I'd never do that. Oh yes, then I end up doing a half marathon. You know, it's just been a key point here is that from Kilimanjaro, I came back. Yes, I wanted to go back and climb lots of mountains and do all that, but I never did. When I loved the running and did that half marathon in the UK, I came back to Australia and I thought, I'm not going to let that happen again. I don't want to not continue this. So I joined a running club in the Northern Beaches. Here's another Joe who comes into my life, Joe Ward. He's a running coach. And from then till now, 6 years later, I am still running because I have a coach and I have someone who holds me accountable to my running goals every year. So it's a big difference between Kilimanjaro, loved it, but didn't climb another mountain, running, got a coach and stuck with it. And, you know, I've done some, you know, pretty cool things with marathons and ultra marathons now because I had a coach. So it's like me coaching other people. We also need a coach too.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. We all need coaches. We all need someone who's got our back when we, particularly when we get to the tough point and we're challenged and we think, oh, why am I doing this? You know, it's like, you know, they have the half marathon in Melbourne here, and it's like doing a I walk, I don't run anymore. I used to, but don't. And I walked 10K in 1 hour and 17 minutes. I wanted to do it in
Who's telling me that? It's so fast.
1:15, but I didn't get to do it. But it's like, you know, Melbourne's flat. There's no hills here. And so there's no challenges. So you have to challenge yourself with the speed. With the speed.
I just love the fact you did that. I mean, I've done a sub hour run of 10Ks, but you know that's my best. And to be able to walk it in only 15 minutes more than that is just amazing. I love it. I love it. When people say, "Oh, I don't run, I walk," I go, "Yeah, it doesn't matter. As long as you're moving, you're winning. That's it."
Absolutely, absolutely. So tell me a couple of other things that you've achieved that we haven't talked about.
I won a trip to America. I won a couple of trips actually to America. The first one I should say earned it. I earned it and took my husband, and that was amazing, VIP and all that. But the bigger win was the time that I earned one together with two team members, and they came with me. One with her husband and one is sight impaired, so he came on his own. We helped him, and my husband came. So there was a group of us that earned this trip. And similar, I'm right on the finishing touches of earning another one, and that will be with one of my leaders too. So there's more to me. You know, it's that lovely saying of, you know, what's at the core of my being, and it's to help other people achieve their goals, so in turn I achieve mine. And you know, that's what it's all about. It's not about doing it for yourself, it's about helping others. And then in turn, I don't say I don't enjoy the benefits of helping other people that build my business as well, but the bigger thing is seeing the joy in them when they get it. It's amazing.
And it does make a difference, doesn't it? When you see that, there's a pleasure in seeing someone become more confident and you know, self-worth, build their self-worth, and just the it's the expression on their face that you see all the time because they're feeling good about themselves, and there's no pleasure better than watching someone grow and feel good about themselves.
Yeah, absolutely.
What would you like to say to people? What would be a couple of tips that you would like to say, Heather, to people if they're sitting in a place where they want to move, but they have a fear that's stopping them from moving from that place to the next where they really want to be?
The first thing would be really go to where you want to be and feel it, experience it. Walk in that person's shoes who's already got that, or imagine yourself how you're going to feel at the top of that mountain, with that home that you've bought or whatever it is. Just literally, you've got to get in there, step into it, and you've got to feel it really, really strong. And if you feel it and it feels good, then what's worse? Stepping through the fear and getting there and feeling that, or staying here stuck in the fear. So, I know someone who's a real introvert who does our business, and he often says, I could have hidden behind being an introvert, but then I wouldn't have been able to retire my wife so she could be full time with our kids. So I pushed through the fear. Every time I had to push through that fear to have a conversation, it was worth it because I now have my wife at home full time with our kids and bringing them up. So you've got to get in there and feel it. Feel that excitement, that whatever it is. It might not be excitement for you. It might be just a satisfaction or whatever. You've got to feel it. And then you've got to come back to here and go, you've got to make a decision. And one thing I believe, whether it's in health or business, is it's much easier to make a decision once that I am going to do X, Y, and Z every day for the next 6 months, year, 1 month, however long, but make that decision once. It's so much easier. So if you're listening to this right now and you really want to do whatever it is, make the decision right now before you hang up on this and go, yes, I'm going to do it. Because that means you only need to make that decision once. You don't need to think about it every day because you've already made that decision. For the next 6 months, I'm going to do whatever it takes for me to climb Kilimanjaro. So make the decision once, not every day. Put yourself in the shoes of where you want to be, and get yourself a community of supporters, because you want people who are cheering you on and yeah, you can do it, because that helps you to go, yes, I can do
And people that believe in you, believe and know that you can do it. It's really, really important.
And remember that you are the sum total of the five people you spend the most time with. So if you are hanging around with people who are not supporting you, you just need to have a little think about that. Hang around people who are going to cheer you on.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you so much, Heather. It's been a fabulous conversation, and you are a huge inspiration to many because you've done things that lots of people want to do. And I've thought about Kilimanjaro. It's never too late, is it?
Oh, it never is too late.
Never
No.
too
I'll put you on my list when I do decide to do it again. I've got
Oh, absolutely.
but I think, okay, if I decide to do it again, I'll reach out to these people.
Absolutely. Please do. You'll inspire me. And, we could do it together.
Yeah, absolutely. Well,
Thank you. Thank you. I'm Faye Waterman, the conversation curator. This has been What's Your Superpower podcast, and I'll be back again soon. Bye for now.